Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
This is Wayne.
My name's Chad.
This is Brodor, still wondering what we're going to talk about.
I like how Dan like presses record and then Brodor didn't see it. And so Brodor starts talking about his role-playing. He's like, I'm gonna do a time jump in my role-playing.
No, I said I did.
Yeah. It's good topic, good thing. And Dan's like, oh, click.
Erase. He smacked me across the mouth like he was my mother. He said, you, Brodor, you're stupid and useless. And
what do you think you're doing talking about role-playing games on Fear the Boot?
So before he went completely off the rails, Cat Williams did the voice. Am I getting the name right, Cat Williams?
Yeah.
He did the voice of a pimp named Slickback on Boondocks.
You say the whole thing.
Yes, yeah. You say the whole thing.
Right.
A pimp named Slickback, which was roughly the inspiration for Mink Washington, which I've now played in a handful of games. And he had a pimp's prayer, which I like to pray every time I deal with Brodor. And it's the reason I have so many rings on my left hand.
Yes.
Oh, no, I'm just thinking about unity.
Lord, please guide my pimp hand and keep it strong, that a Brodor may know his place.
I do.
Because you guys are running your mouth with all this great show topic stuff about comic book writing and time jumps and RPGs, and I'm sitting here like hovering over the record button like, Brodor, shut your whore mouth, because you're just running out. I mean, you're giving away the milk for free when I run a dairy farm. And I'm not even, there's not even a bucket underneath you.
I'm totally lost on this.
I have to say, this is my first negative review. Usually in my employment, I have positive reviews. I don't know how to deal with a negative review. I'm going to cry.
Do what you usually do. Drink and cry. Yeah. Suck your thumb.
You know, the thing is, I can't cry.
Really?
Like, there are times where I really, really just want to just unload and let it all out, and I can't do it. I can't do it.
Do you mean you can't cry as in no tears come out, or it's just like, nope?
Like,
I just don't feel
like it starts, but then it's like impotence, right? Like, you're like, you have the drive, like, I really want to put some blood in it, and then it just doesn't happen.
All these things I don't know anything about.
Dairy farms, impotence, crying?
I know.
Yeah, I mean,
where's Pat? He'd at least
Pat's
know
like,
about the
I've
dairy
got a,
farm.
I've got a suppository for you.
Pat's like, I got a dairy farm that'll cure both impotence and non-crying.
Right.
I'm going to put this Viagra in my pee hole, and then I'm going to put my pee hole in you.
So you've met Pat before.
Oh. All that I can think of is there was a spell in D&D 2nd edition that has got to be one of the most horrific spells to ever exist in a main D&D book. I'm not talking Splat books or Vile Darkness or whatever. I'm talking the main books.
Splat books. Shut up.
And in this spell is a high-level wizard spell where you cut out your own heart and replace it with a stone and then put the heart in a box. And
it's like
then
a like, phylactery thing.
It's similar. Yeah.
It's kind of like that. It's sort of like lichdom, but not exactly. And it's, I don't remember the name of the spell, or the details. I'm going to dig up my second
it's
edition.
It's like lichdom, but it's not evil. So player characters can do it.
Oh no, it was totally like, I think there were requirements on this. So you couldn't be good at lying, but I'm going to dig up my second edition DMG at some point to read the description
See,
of the spell.
I'm just thinking about the three ribs that I had to remove to do this ritual, the wands that I turned them into.
Ah, there you go. Well, they're slightly bent wands.
Right. That's so, all right with me. You know. See, sort of Count Dooku shit going on.
All the talk about milk, the people that are
still on the milk.
Because I got lost after that at some point. I have no idea where we went off the rails, but I don't even see the rails. But the guys that did The Gamers and Gamers 2 Darkness Rising, they did Journey Quest was the next thing they did after that. And one of the main characters is a really horrible wizard that the only spell he seems to be able to do is creating milk. And they refer to him as the lactomancer. And that's what I'm thinking as you're talking about all of the milk and rituals.
Witcher had a cheese.
Yeah. Was that the Oniromancer?
I think it was the Oniromancer.
Well, because one was the dream.
No, Oniromancer was the dream one.
Yeah. What was the cheese
so
wizard?
So the cheese one, I forget what it's called, but the whole thing is that you get this cheese and it's like the stinkiest, ripest, like raunchiest cheese you've ever had.
But you could read fortunes in it.
It's divination.
You breathe in the musk of the cheese, and it basically like, if a normal person breathed this in, they would be poisoned and die. But, you know,
but you're a witcher.
But you're a witch. No, no. The wizard, though, who does the cheese magic, breathes it in and casts his spells, and then it takes him into an altered state of consciousness, which he
And like his cheeses were so foul that he had like a little pocket dimension he kept them in. And when you, as the Witcher, go into this pocket dimension, you have to watch where you walk, because if you get too close to these cheeses, you start taking damage.
I have to admit, I missed that side story.
I'm hoping that that is going to be a character class in the Witcher role-playing game,
right?
Which we still need to get the guys from Artalsorin, or however you pronounce it, on here to talk about that. But anyway,
do you know what the sword is called that you get from completing that quest?
I don't remember.
To the Intelmire.
That's
he,
what
he
yes.
named it after cheese.
Because I beat the quest like in both my playthroughs.
And it's a cheese colored sword. It's like this. It's not gold. It's like this yellow colored sword.
Yeah, it looks so like somebody's Cheeto Dorito hands. Like if you just went straight off the character sheet. So.
Yeah, kind of.
All right. So this is a bonus episode for anyone who's not gathered. We're going to just do all kinds of random topics. They'll be vaguely geeky in nature, but they're just going to be absolutely all over the board. So I want to start off with one we were talking about while having
bonus
dinner.
Episode. Thank God I can take my pants off. Jesus.
No, keep your pants on. I'm
so not really a bonus.
Yeah. But what do you think the lowest form of horror is? Because, see, I'm torn. To me, the lowest form of horror is either jump scares, so startling, right? So you're watching a horror movie, video game, TV show, whatever.
Like Fizzgig, we were talking about at dinner when he jumps out of the hole at you and shocks you as a child, and you shit yourself in the theater, and your great-grandma's got to take you home. Yeah.
I'm sorry, but no, that did not happen to me. But no, I think jump scares, but the only reason I don't know that I can put jump scares as the lowest form of horror is because there is another one I despise almost, if not as much.
Body horror?
Gore. Slasher.
Yeah, Gorno. Yeah.
Yeah, the stuff that was really big in the 1980s, it's not even scary. It's just incredibly graphic and gory.
Okay, so
the RoboCop type of stuff, the, you know.
Well, the thing is, they tend to go together, too. Like, if you look at a lot of the Friday the 13th, the Nightmare on Elm Street, they'll have the startled shock jump.
Yeah.
And the gore.
Like, okay, I remember where I really started to lose it with jump scares was watching a movie, which I'll admit was not that great overall, which was Signs. Because I was sitting there watching that movie, and this was back when, you know, you still held out some hope that Shlam-a-nam-a-ding-dong might produce, you know, some good stuff. And I was watching that movie, and partway through the movie, he did so many jump scares. And I can watch disturbing content. And if it's genuinely psychologically disturbing, I can handle it and I'm okay with it. But I got jump scared so many times that I had to step out partway through the movie to down some Xanax because it was giving me a panic attack.
No joke
on that. So I need a vote here. Jump scares or gore, which is the lower form of horror?
I'm voting jump scares.
Jump scares, Chad?
Well, I just like jump scares, but I will vote gore because gore is cheap. Jump scares require a setup. It requires proper camera work. It requires building up of tension.
Blasting organs at the camera is a lot easier.
You load cow innards into an air gun and blast them at an actor. Yep. Woo, you talented motherfucker. Now, listen, I am going to tell you about a movie. I had to look it up because I want to get the names right. All right. This movie is called Zombie, right? Very.
Okay.
You know, it's 1979. It is Italian horror. It is by Lucio Fulci. And Lucio Fulci's name is the Spaghetti Splatter King. All right.
Okay.
So this guy makes.
I can guess where this is headed.
Right. So this guy makes horror movies and it body horror, and he makes, you know, zombie horror movies, and it's just his movies are exceedingly graphic. And unlike other horror movie directors where they're trying to gross you out or they're trying to scare you or they're trying to be extreme or whatever, this guy hates his audience. And I don't mean that in a sort of whatever sense. I mean He believes people who watch horror movies, especially gore horror movies, are deviants. And so he makes horror movies.
So he spanks us?
Yes.
That's hot.
He makes horror movies so graphic and so gory as to punish the people who are watching the movie. That's how gory his movies are.
I have seen a few of his movies because I love a good B horror movie.
And you love to be punished.
A good bad horror movie or right. like a lot of the 80s, 70s, like that mm-hmm. era horror movie.
It goes beyond,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And like you're not even watching it and going, oh my God, it's the thing and it's so gross. Mm-hmm. And oh, it's gross. Oh, look, the head is melting off the table. It's so gross. It isn't like that. It gets to a point to where you're like, is this over? Yeah. Come on.
Like, are you? Okay, this was obviously not spaghetti splatters right. movie or what?
He made a movie about cannibals one time.
Right.
You know, and it was just like,
if I ever did
a deep dive into people eating other people.
If I ever get enough money to go from mentally ill to eccentric, I will open a themed restaurant named after him.
Yes.
But
the Spaghetti King of Horror?
Yes, exactly. The Spaghetti King. We'll just call it that. The Spaghetti King.
Yeah, yeah.
Of horror will just be something.
That'll be like an appetizer.
Yes.
That's the appetizer plate.
Every bowl is just a bloated anus of pasta and tomato sauce just dripping down the sides of the rump.
That's right.
So, Chet, since you're mentioning other horror movies,
yeah,
they are making another sequel to Blair Witch. Mm-hmm. I actually am kind of interested because one of the
I'm not big into found footage, but
well,
I mean, I appreciate it, but I'm not into it.
I really enjoyed it because it was one of the first of that style.
Yeah,
this one though, one of the concepts they're playing with is that it's also going to be found footage. It's going to be one of the character's relatives out looking for that person from the first movie, but it's all modern day found footage. So it's stuff on like iPhones and much higher quality than the found footage of the original one. It won't be nearly as shaky, won't be blurry.
Huh.
And that's what they're going for with it. So I got to say I'm interested because I did like the original a lot when it came out.
Okay, so I have another movie that I have to put out there.
Broder's never going to get to vote.
No.
I'm waiting to vote too.
Well, anyway. I'm presenting evidence here. I'm going to totally destroy this name. It is a 1929 silent movie. There's a lot of horror fans out there who are going, oh yeah,
Nosferatu.
No, that's not French. This is a French movie.
Oh,
this is called Un Chien Andalou. The Andalusian Dog is the movie.
Okay,
and it is I think it's a French movie. Spanish director. One of the artists, Salvador Dali, had a part in it. It's Louise Bunel. And it's a surrealist movie, has no plot to it. The chronology is disjointed and that sort of thing. It is famous for this one scene. And this scene is so visceral. I mean, it's just excellent in how awful it is. And there's a woman and she's looking up at the moon and there's these clouds going by and a man comes up behind her and he puts his hand, I believe, on her forehead. And then he takes out a straight razor and she's looking up at the moon. She doesn't seem afraid. And then it shows like where her eye is, cuts to the moon is where the round part of the moon is. And it cuts to her eye. And then, you know, the straight razor is coming up and then it switches to the moon. And there's a thin cloud that jets across the moon. And then it cuts back to her and it shows him slitting her eyeball open.
Oh my gosh.
Wow. That's amazing.
1929.
Okay,
beautiful. I'm pretty good with a lot of gore and things. The eyeball is what gets to me.
So yeah.
Gore is for comedy. It's not for horror.
Right.
All right. So gore is the lowest form of horror.
Okay.
Because gore is for making me laugh, like the movie Dead Alive or Atomic Kid. Gore is for silliness and slapsticky.
I don't know. It does nothing for like
Robo Geisha.
I saw Hobo with a Shotgun and I liked everything about the movie.
Loved Hobo's
Shotgun. But the gore.
Oh, it was an integral part of the movie though.
It was comedy.
Because it's the genre.
Right.
It's the genre.
Because I rented it, I thought I was going to watch
Rucker Hauer kicking ass
in a revenge flick. where
you had the revenge.
It's basically falling down with a hobo.
It's
a grindhouse style movie.
I did not know it was a grindhouse.
Yeah, it is a very specific movie, and I get what you're saying. I totally agree.
Because keep in mind, I was just going by the blurb on like charter movies. Like I'm just going down the list of available movies.
Did you see Grindhouse? Because that's where Quentin Tarantino and Robert Rodriguez did a movie, and it was like a couple of different movies. It was Death Proof, and it was the girl with the one leg.
It was Quentin Tarantino rapes someone again, or tries to rape someone again.
So what everyone always talks about, though, isn't any of the movie itself. It's the trailer.
It's a trailer. So there's two movies in this one movie, and then there's trailers that separate them. And different people did the trailers for them. One of them was Hobo with a Shotgun. And it's like never intended to be made. I mean, this over-the-top grindhouse Rutger Hauer as a hobo with a shotgun. You know, it's like, oh, my God, who wouldn't want to see that?
Three of my favorite things right there.
I'm expecting.
And was it Machete?
They had Machete was one of them. Another one.
I was expecting a mashup of Falling Down.
Lesbian Werewolves of the SS was the Rob Zombie one.
I was expecting a mashup of Falling Down and Split Second.
Because you didn't see Grindhouse.
I had gotten it. But just from the description, it just said your Rutger Hauer goes into a new town. He's a hobo who wants to save enough money to buy a lawnmower to start an honest business. And the city pushes him and screws him until he snaps.
Not only pushes him and screws him,
and spends his lawnmower money on a shotgun, like you do, and goes on a killing spree.
And
my shotgun was way more expensive than my lawnmower.
They had the gangs there, so they had like a bunch of mooks and people doing all this terrible stuff, and no one is good. The only good guy is the hobo, who is like the lowest of the low, right?
Yeah.
And he's the only good guy.
And a prostitute who he is delusionally convinced is a school teacher.
Perfect grindhouse tropes. Absolutely pitch perfect to the genre. They even had these like wacko boss fights in it and stuff.
Yeah.
It's like you had these super mooks and perfect.
I didn't know. I looked at the description. I didn't see it at all. So, Broder, you're doing a time jump, or did a time jump in your game.
And Chad and I have been talking about this because one of the things that we were pitching around a few weeks ago as a show topic was the fact that Chad's game and my game, we haven't played in a while.
Variety.
It wasn't my fault this week.
A variety of circumstances, right? So my game, I only run it once a month. Long story short.
Yeah, same here. Wayne.
Wasn't my fault this week.
It had been 2 months since we had played.
Yeah, Wayne.
Wasn't my fault this week.
I email with my players back and forth about what's going on, primarily one of my players, and he's been pitching me all of these ideas. So in character, I'm thinking about doing this. In character, I'm thinking about doing that. And ultimately, our email exchange got to the point where, look, Griswold has to leave the party. Right. He's got to go away at least for some time to accomplish the things that he wants to accomplish as his personal
to go on like a European
to
vacation.
Go on a walkabout. Right. He wants to go on a walkabout.
National Lampoon's no one.
He wants to go on a walkabout, and, you know, we've been emailing back and forth and we haven't played for a while. And I thought about the episode that we discussed time jumps, and I thought, and then I started rereading the Dragonlance Chronicles. Picks up right the first book, Dragon's Bottom Twilight, picks up right where the party's getting together after 5 years being apart. And I was just, all of those things were kind of percolating in my brain, and I thought, you know what, I'm gonna pitch this to the group. So I sent out a mass email to the party, and I thought, hey, this is a concept that I've been considering. What if we jumped forward in time 2 or 3 years? And here are some of the reasons why, without getting into my player DJ's reasons for his character Griswold and why it would be good for him, but just said, don't respond to the email. You've got several days to think about it. When you show up on Sunday, let's just talk about it. And to belay anyone's concerns, I'm prepared to pick up exactly where we left off.
Yeah.
However, I want you to get your feedback. So my players show up, and it was a resounding success in terms of everybody thought, man, if I had 2 or 3 years with my character to do X, Y, and Z and pursue my own personal interests,
I would write the great American novel, but instead I would just get drunk and high every day.
So And that's what we did, is we sat around, because one of my buddies is really into craft beer, way more than me, and I like craft beer quite a bit. He always brings special beer to the game, and we have a few beers and imbibe and what have you. But we just sat there and drank and talked and ate my wife's dinner, and we just, we spent hours just...
I'm glad that sounds because we're about drugs and eating and drinking and ate my wife's dinner. Okay, okay. Yeah. All right, continue.
I have to tell you.
They had tossed salad.
Despite the fact that we had not played in 2 months, and last minute one of the guys couldn't show up because of something that happened at work, but we salvaged so much momentum and passion for the game because everyone had an opportunity to find personal investment in their character. And now we haven't made any final decisions about anything, really. Everybody was so excited and went in so many different directions. We're like, okay, you know, by 9:30, we're like, all right, yes, I got to go to bed. But you were going to start exchanging emails. And so when we play next month on the 3rd of September, we're going to have, you know, it'll probably take us an hour or more just to sit down and go, okay, here are things that have happened with your individual characters over the course of the last couple of years. Here are things that have happened with the world over the last couple of years, and start. And I'm very, very excited about it.
Cool. You'll have to give us a report on how that goes. Wayne or Brodor, was it one of you that was just talking about how somebody actually made Aquaman a good character by doing something? Because normally, one of the quickest ways to ruin a comic book is to start thinking about physics and chemistry. Because, for example, if you look at just the amount of energy it would take for Flash to run that fast and that far, he would have to consume
America from the Speed Force, man.
Right, sure.
That was their answer to starting to think about it, because the original Flash, the Golden Age, Jay Garrick, did not.
Right.
His was pure muscle.
But they also had a time-traveling treadmill, too.
Again, Jay Garrick didn't.
But that was the also point, in fact, there are actually college classes on this that are sort of like applied math-type classes that do the physics of comic books, where it's like exactly... why would these things work or not work?
If you can dig it up, if you're interested in that sort of thing, you should look at the old Usenet discussions of Larry Niven's Ring World, where physicists got together and colleges and stuff in the early days of the internet were all talking back and forth. And it's like, do you know what Ring World is?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, it's basically a ring that is not a Dyson sphere.
Actually, if you've played Stellaris, you have probably seen one. Because in Stellaris, it's a 4X space game.
By the way, I really enjoyed the hell out of Ringworld. It was really good.
I've not read it, so I have no comment on that. But amongst the various empires that it randomly generates, on most maps, you will get one or two what they call stagnant ascendancies. Yeah. And what a stagnant ascendancy is, it's like a race that has been out in the stars way longer than you have. Yeah. Thousands, millions, they never say, but way longer than you have. But at some point, they kind of topped off, their society became total laziness, malaise, and they just quit. So they've got this massive technology, but they're not going anywhere, they're not doing anything. But in one of these systems, in these stagnant ascendancies, you can find partially dilapidated ring worlds. And what a ring world is it's like a Dyson sphere. Is the idea that you hit a point where a society needs all of the energy that a sun is capable of producing. You need a fusion reactor the size of a sun. And so you build a sphere that basically entraps the sun and captures and utilizes all of its energy. What a ring world is imagine the same idea, except it's a ring.
About the size of a planet's orbit.
Yeah, so if you can imagine a ring.
If a Dyson sphere is a ball, you take a slice out of that ball. Right, and that's what you've got.
If you imagine the Earth's orbit, and I realize the Earth's orbit's not perfectly circular, but if you were to draw that out into something that's roughly circular and rotating, that's a ring world.
Yeah, so these physicists and stuff got on old Usenet and whatnot, and were debating how it would work and whatnot, and this guy published a paper. Basically, it was, I forget what the title was, but it's like, you know, ring world would be destroyed, because he proved out how ring world would not work. Like, you could build it, but then it would collapse on itself after some time, or this, what bad thing would happen. Larry Niven read that and he took part in all the discussions. And when he wrote the sequel, he incorporated what this guy said as improvements to Ringworld. Because in the first one, he doesn't talk all about it. It's just like they find it and there's nobody there. And they land on it. And it's discovery, right? And so the second one is about more discovery. They're discovering, oh, well, wait, it has this and this and this and this, what this guy wrote in his story.
Huh. But my punchline here being, there is one superhero where starting to think too hard about the physics actually makes him more badass.
Dude, he licks blowhole. I mean, he's horrible. He's the worst character ever.
Yes, which is right. Aquaman.
Except for Plastic Man, who is the worst character.
I agree with you. The worst thing, I actually read the Tower of Babel comics because I had watched the animated movie based on it. And I, in the course of about four issues, realized I had never hated a superhero or villain or whatever, anything in those books as much as I hated Plastic Man.
That story is so good, though.
It is a great story. But point being here, with Aquaman, if you think about, okay, guy talks to fish, whatever, not that impressive.
But Khal Drogo looks amazing. And I was saying that for the first time, I think that Aquaman could potentially be an interesting and badass character. Yeah. And that's when Wayne was talking.
Right.
Started talking about it.
Because Jeff Johns, when he relaunched Aquaman during the whole New 52 stuff, really took some time to think about the character and the reasons why he could potentially be interesting. Jeff Johns is just an amazing writer. I've enjoyed a lot of what he does. But he takes a look at the character. He's like, okay, this is a guy that's at the bottom of the ocean. He has to be able to survive the pressures at the bottom of the ocean.
He comes in, he polishes a turd. This is Jeff Johns.
Yeah.
Comes in, he polishes a turd, he leaves, and people go, oh, wow, that turd really does stink.
Yep. But while he's polishing it,
it's amazing.
It's beautiful.
But yeah, I mean, that is a fascinating thought exercise of what would it take to simply do what he does.
How to make a crap character awesome in a comic book?
Yeah.
Because
if you can go down.
Kevin Smith did it with Green Arrow. Yeah. Green Arrow had gotten really lame until
he
redid
it. That run, I'd want to cry.
If you can go down several thousand feet in the ocean
and not be crushed,
that is an enormous power.
If you can, most popular girl out in high school and not be crushed, that's a superpower.
But also to be able to ascend and descend those depths really fast. All right, put this in perspective for anyone who doesn't know.
Not getting the bends. Yeah.
Well, the basic math here. If you've ever taken anything like a scuba diving class or something like that.
Nope.
The pressure of water, you basically double or you add another atmosphere of pressure. Okay, so if you're standing at sea level on the beach, you're at one atmosphere of pressure, which is roughly 14 pounds per square inch of your body, just of the weight of air weighing down on you. If you go into the water, every 10 feet of ocean water you go down adds another atmosphere of pressure. So if you swim down 10 feet, your body is under twice the pressure it was at when you were on the beach. If you go down 20 feet, you're at three times the pressure. If you go down 30 feet, you are at four times the pressure. So if you go down thousands of feet into the ocean and live there, the amount you have to keep in mind, you're talking about literally several tons of pressure per square inch of your body. That is impressive.
And then the director from Titanic did it.
I never saw The Abyss.
No, he made a diving bell. His hobby is exploration.
Yeah.
Not J.J. Abrams.
James Cameron.
James Cameron. Yeah, His hobby is exploration. And he explored the Marianas Trench?
I don't know.
He went down like further than anybody has ever done before. And he essentially uses his blockbuster movies that I don't really care for to finance his exploration.
Yeah. And it's all
hobby is movie making. Yeah. His job is exploring the ocean's depth.
It's all heavy gear that he does with it. It's top of the line, state of the art gear that he has. But he doesn't walk around down there without it.
No. Well, no, he doesn't walk around. You can't walk around.
Yeah,
down.
He's in like
he's in a bell. He's in a bathysphere.
You will freaking die fast.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, the exact maximum depth at which a human can survive, you'll get a whole bunch of varying answers because it depends on what the circumstances are, how long you're there, exactly which inert gas you filled your body with. For example, a lot of really deep divers, they will start to breathe helium instead of breathing nitrogen, because of the way it impacts the body and such. There's all kinds of crazy stuff like that. So you'll get all kinds of numbers. But the point being, you ain't going to survive under any conditions if you go down that far, unless you're one hell of a badass. But I found it interesting because usually when you start applying physics and chemistry and all this stuff, it actually makes most stories look dumber. But in the case of Aquaman, if you are willing to keep the suspension of disbelief, he suddenly becomes a whole lot more impressive than he was before.
And he talks to fishes.
I always thought that what was interesting about Aquaman, Namor, and all that, more so Namor, has nothing to do with their power. I talk to fish. Who cares? That doesn't matter. What's Batman's power? Infinite wealth? I mean, who cares?
But Namor bangs Sue Richards. That's power.
But it's
Aquaman bangs Mera.
Superpower.
It's the political situation of it. I mean, he's the king of Atlantis. And the king of Atlantis is at sometimes war with the,
the Amazonians.
The Amazonians. And there's whole, like, alternate plot lines where they flood Europe and fight each other over and stuff.
Yep.
To me, that's what makes the character interesting. You know, is the alternate setting.
That is real mythology.
Yeah.
However, it is not the same Atlanteans. But in Greek mythology, the Amazonians did have a fight against a kingdom known as Atlantis. But it is not the same Atlantis as appears in, was it Plato or who was it?
It's Plato.
Okay. Yeah. Who was the robot? Because it's a different Atlantis. Mm. They actually know where this Atlantis is. It's actually a portion of Africa. But they actually named the location where the Amazons were, and they were ultimately defeated by an individual who is from the exact same place as the people that defeated the Spartans. It is, I believe, an escaped Theban slave who, like, leads an army that ultimately defeats the Amazons. But the point being, though, the Amazon versus Atlantean war, yeah, while they're meshing Plato's Atlanteans together with this other group, which once again, it's a coincidence of names, that is real mythology.
So this is something that I have always wanted to role play. I have always wanted to
ask your wife.
I don't think
if you want me to be
in Wonder Woman's costume,
if you want,
I know she can fit in Namor's
costume. Chet and I were talking about this actually this evening in the driveway before we came in the house about how we're very boring vanilla, what have you, when it comes to the bedroom. And I looked at Chet, I was like, you know, I'm pretty uninteresting. Until I'm not. But no, I've always wanted to. So I want to take all of the tropes of superhero role playing games, and I want to do it in sort of a Bronze Age setting, right? So I want to have, hey, we've got ancient Greece, and that cat's got super speed, or we're in ancient Greece, and that person can fly and has super strength. I want to do that level of.
You
game.
Know, they're kind of getting more and more direction in both DC and Marvel. Because, well, I mean, I'm talking about the movies here, not the comic books. But with Marvel, they're trying to, you know, talk about how Apocalypse was the first mutant and all that stuff. And in DC, there's a line that's in one of the trailers, right, that I think actually got taken out of the movie, where Waller is like talking about how she's talking about how, like, Samson, who breaks the two pillars of the temple, everyone who doesn't know how temples were constructed at the time, there would typically be two very large, usually about 24 inch across, wooden pillars. They were just literally like stripped trees that would be put side by side in the middle of these temples. They were not very large buildings, but that's what you're talking about. So when Samson breaks the pillars, that's what you're talking about, is basically
collapses
two trees, right, that are about 12 to 24 inches across. And then she mentions, she's like, or the Philistine secret weapon of Goliath. And she starts taking all these people that are from the Bible, but you could just as easily draw it into any other, you know, set of lore or mythos or whatever you want to talk about.
Well, let's face it, look at superheroes right now. How many of them had their origins in Greek or Roman mythologies, well, right, or what Egyptian mythologies?
But that's what I want to
know. Or Hercules.
What about Shazam?
The wisdom of Solomon, the strength of Hercules.
But that's what I want to gain.
Speed of Mercury.
Get rid of tanks, get rid of planes, get rid of lasers, get rid of missiles. Just, you know, it's me, Superman, versus your Bronze Age swords and shields and your bows and arrows.
I think,
suck it.
I mean, look at mythology. Look at Hercules.
Right.
And his labors. Wouldn't it be cool to play characters and you're doing a plot line that is not a carbon copy, but is like that,
right,
where, you know, you walk down the street and nobody's like, oh my God, he can pick up a bull and that's amazing. And oh my God, we need to send armies after him or he needs to help. But it's more like, yeah, that happens in the world. It's rare, but why don't you go clean out my stables? Right, you know, use that power to do right. that.
But then there is there
but
is.
But you're building a. It's not about the power that you have, and everyone's impressed with the power. But you are building a legend and a myth, and as you build the myth, people are impressed by the myth
story too. Of even if you wanted to do it with some kind of frame of reference in our common stories. Start with superheroes in the present day and maybe some supervillains as well, and they get kicked back to 500 BC, and that's where the story gets told.
Been so many bad ones like that, though.
But I know, but Chad,
the Batman, the Bat Knight, the prehistoric Batman.
I know, but that's I am a big believer in finding the dirty, rotten things of this world. And making them good.
He's the Geoff Johns of gaming.
That's right. I am. I do it the Jack LaLanne way. I take that steaming Michael Bay turd by the teeth, and I will swim
Why
it.
Why does the turd have teeth? Now, are we back to body horror
I'll take
again?
It by my teeth.
And why are you biting a turd? Are we back to body horror again?
They're delicious.
Oh, no. Depends on what you've been eating, but yeah.
And I'm out.
Okay. And cut. We're done for good.
So I hope you all liked Brodor. He might be coming back.
Oh, snap. So sometimes I think about cosmetically, how do I view my game in my head?
Yeah.
And I try to think about, you know, film noir or you know, what have you. But sometimes I always think I want to run a game. I want to look at it like a cartoon. I don't want to have cartoon physics. When I'm looking for inspiration, I'm looking at things in the realm of the cartoon world. So the Bruce Timm Batman style
yes.
stuff.
Or I think you have to look at the good cartoons.
Thundar the Barbarian.
Duh. But I'm not talking about the ones you can't go back to. I'm talking about the ones that are good. Like,
wait, you can't go back to Thundar?
No, believe it or not, you can't go back to Silverhawks either. As much
Silverhawks.
This was the worst show ever.
You know, but it had some good visual concept, and that's really about it.
Okay,
Buzzsaw. I loved Buzzsaw. But anyway, I ran a Transformers campaign that was inspired by the first 15-20 minutes of the Transformers movie. And it
but that's
was,
all there is of the movie.
Exactly. That's all it is. It's a movie short. It ends right about there. And that inspired a plot line. And it was one of the best campaigns that I have ever run, easily in my top five. And it was inspired by a cartoon. And the entire thing had a much more adult feel to it and a serious feel to it. But it still nonetheless played out very much like a graduated or a matured version of a cartoon. You know, it was something that played out like, oh, I guess like the heavy metal movie, except sans all the gratuity. But nonetheless, you know, it was that kind of thing.
I've never run a game with a cartoon vibe, and it's something I've always wanted to explore.
Because everyone goes gonzo, and there's nothing wrong with that. But usually when someone says I'm running a cartoon-like game,
well,
they mean that I'm either going to run Bugs Bunny or this is going to be really over the top Saturday
morning. Let me ask you this. If you run a cartoon game, are you going to want Who Framed Roger Rabbit or are you going to want Cool World? Most people are going to tend towards the gonzo. They're going to tend towards Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Sure.
It's more expressive.
Yeah, no, and I don't disagree with that. But what I'm saying is, for example, if I said I was going to run a cartoon game, and I'm going to base it on Grave of the Fireflies, or I'm going to base it on Wings of Hominum Hominum Mayonnaise.
Hominaise?
I'm out. I don't want to play that.
But
don't want to play at Wings of Hominaise or Grave of the Fireflies?
Grave of the Fireflies.
I'm not familiar with either of them.
Okay. But
have you ever cried manly tears?
I try.
Oh, yeah. If you want a movie to make you cry like a little bitch.
Yeah.
Grave of the Fireflies will do it. It's a cartoon, but I guarantee you it will wreck you as a human being.
I probably said this on the mic. There is only one piece of media that has ever made me cry. It was not Grave of the Fireflies.
Kill la Kill?
No. It was. It is an anime called Anna Hanna.
Mm.
And it is the only media that I can think of that has ever actually gotten tears from me. And I have rewatched the series probably three times. I watched the movie related to it. The same scene every time still gets me.
I'm a pushover. I tear up at anything.
Yeah, and my wife does too. And she says I have no soul.
I teared up on an anime called Kill la Kill. I have never shed manly tears over a Japanese schoolgirl's uniform before.
Hat has.
I mean, okay, so that sounds.
Is that what that is? That a new euphemism? My manly tears.
My manly tears. I get it.
Yeah,
I know where you're coming from. So I know the end.
The people
like
who haven't
anime,
seen it are like, oh well, my Chad, that's a sexual fetish right there. Nope, not even a little bit. It is an excellent, great story, and it is surreal. I cannot even begin to describe
Close
what
is
it is
a
about.
Very big part of that show.
What is Close?
Close
yeah.
is a very big part of that
so show. So there's a movie called Bone Tomahawk with Kurt Russell, which if you haven't seen it, I recommend you go out and see it. But there's a moment, spoiler alert, all right, and this is a big spoiler. Kurt Russell's character, he's going to fucking die, right? Hmm. He's about at his end, but he's got his rifle and he's going to fight off the rest of the troglodytes. And this old man who, through the course of the film, has been visiting his wife's grave, goes to Kurt Russell, realizes that Kurt Russell's going to die. I'm going to get choked up thinking about this. The last time that I got a little weepy at a movie. But Kurt Russell looks at the guy and the old man looks at him, and Kurt Russell accepting his fate. The old man looks at him and he says, you know, I'll say goodbye to your wife. Kurt Russell looks at the old dude and he says, I'll say hello to yours. It was really, really touching.
Crazy.
Yeah, it's a great flick. If you haven't seen it, you gotta go out, because it's Deadlands, right? Mm-hmm. But they roll back the goofy, right? And they just make it sort of scary horror, right?
Yeah.
It's very, very tense. And there's a bit of sort of graphic violence in it, but it's not splatter over the top. And when they do uncork, when that movie, because you're like, this is kind of boring, Mike, you're crazy. Dude, when they uncork, it goes sideways. It's great. It's a great flick. But I'll say hello to yours.
As a teenager, one of my date movies, and I won't get into the name of it because I'm going to give spoilers, but while watching it, there is a point in the movie where the main female character is riding a bicycle, closes her eyes, stretches her arms out, and I remember at the very first time I saw it, my thought was, I hope she smacks into something. The next thing that happens is a truck comes around and she smacks in and is killed. I never laughed so hard at a movie.
Wow.
That's fantastic.
Wait, I'm a sick man. Now, okay, Grave of the Fireflies. Yeah,
right,
that one had me crying like a bitch.
Yeah.
But I'm with you, Wayne. The inappropriate things I laugh at in movies, which now they're saying is a sign of early onset dementia, which is fine. I at least everything will be new to me again. But I'll wake up every morning to a fresh new world, and maybe I'll hope again.
And a fresh new diaper.
And a fresh new diaper, and I don't even remember why I'm wearing them. And I'll be all upset because I'm late to do my podcast.
And you'll think it's 1950-08.
The important thing is that we wore an onion on our belt, as was the style then. But man, Wayne, I'm with you. The horrible, horrible things that I laugh at. What was the one that we just saw? It was terrible, and I just could not stop cracking up.
And it South Park?
No, because it was something like you were not supposed to laugh at in a movie, and I just could not. I'll have to think of it. Of course, I'll remember it after we cut the mics. But Carl and I were just watching some movie, and there was something that was a really serious movie and something you were not supposed to laugh at. And it just, to me, it was.
Was it JFK?
Every time somebody says back and to the left, it just loses it.
That is one of those events that proves you put anything at double time and add in Yakety Sax and it becomes funny.
You know, we were talking about JFK today at work, and my favorite take of the JFK conspiracy theory comes from Red Dwarf.
Oh,
yeah. They're time traveling and they accidentally save his life and the world goes.
They come out of a portal and they bump into Lee Harvey Oswald, which causes him to miss, which completely changes the world. Because I think it turns Kennedy, like somebody tried to kill him. And so it turns him into a megalomaniac. He's like all paranoid. And it's like this horrible, terrible.
The
Nazi
world
state
becomes horrible. Yeah. So they find JFK at one point in time and bring him forward and show him the world that happens because he's alive, and then take him back to the grassy knoll and give him a gun so he shoots himself. Yeah. And they're like, the conspiracy theorists are going to love this one.
Yeah.
In Pokemon Go, I keep trying to name all of my Spearows Agnew.
Okay, that is awesome.
Appropriate. Timely.
Very timely. I still wonder to this day how many people caught the historic reference in Star Trek VI, which was, what, 1991? I mean, this was whenever it came out. I don't remember. It's somewhere in the 90s. But when Star Trek VI came out and Kirk and Bones are on trial in front of the Klingon High Council or whatever, and one of the guys yelling at him says, "Don't wait for the translation, answer me now."
Yeah.
That was from the Cuban Missile Crisis. Because, of course, that entire movie, I mean, you have to be kind of an idiot not to realize this, but the entire movie was a parable about the end of the Cold War, which is what was occurring at that time. It's about, you know, what do you do when the wall comes down, whether you're talking about the literal wall in Berlin or the Iron Curtain or whatever.
Or the neutral zone. No, that's Romulan.
That's Romulans. Yeah. The Organian Peace Treaty is what keeps the Klingons back. But the point being, though, that...
Think warriors care about a piece of paper?
That's... You literally read my mind.
Right.
There was a... A whole bunch of stuff in that movie was taken from things people actually said in the Cold War. And that was one of them. Was... who was the...
Khrushchev.
No, it wasn't Khrushchev. Who was the guy?
I just like saying Khrushchev.
Ooh, I just like to bang my chair on the table. Like, bam!
But you know, they don't do that crap anymore.
Yeah,
I know. We even have the North Koreans and they don't do that crap. Yeah.
I know. The UN's gotten incredibly boring. I think.
Good.
Powers made them complacent.
We need the UN to be conducted more like South Korean Parliament.
Or British Parliament.
Or yes.
Or Indian Parliament. Or basically any parliament. Something about or parliamentary American procedures. Gladiator. Congressional procedures, everyone just yap.
Yeah.
Parliamentary procedures, it's they really laugh at each other, boring. They jeer at
yeah.
each other.
C-SPAN is incredibly boring and we get nothing done. In parliaments, they actually get things done.
Have you ever,
and it is a wild ride on the way there.
Have you ever tuned into C-SPAN when they show Parliament live in session?
Dude, I just
like 3 o'clock in the morning.
This is as political as I'm going to get, but just watching,
it's great. They make fun of each other.
Watching the right people in front of whatever the governing body of the EU is, when you get the right people behind the mic, that right there, that's a Saturday night.
Yep.
That's save you a whole lot of money.
I watched it one time. They're the prime minister and he's like giving a speech or something, and it's a pretty benign speech. And then they start like yell, "Oh yeah!" And they start yelling at him, and he's like, "Very, you know, speech." He's like, he slams the paper down, and he's like, "Oh come on! You just voted on this last week. You're..." And he's just like, "You are an idiot." And it's just like, oh,
it's like a fight between Orson Welles and the Planter's Peanut. Who doesn't want to watch that occur?
So at work, it's horrible. I will confess, one of my great regrets in life is quitting the fantasy shop. But
you could always get that back.
And there's that's a story for not on the mic.
Okay,
but because if there's anybody in the industry that listens to this show, like any even one, I do not want to say anything out of turn.
Okay.
But one of the things that keeps us sane at work are the names of our patients. F*** you, HIPAA. So
please do not violate any federal laws in my show.
Here we go.
Because there are very, very few things I would stop you from doing prior to an N-bomb. Violating HIPAA on my show is on that short list.
Okay. So. All right. I'm not going to violate HIPAA, but
okay,
I will.
Or drop an N-bomb.
But I will say this.
Okay.
At the next Fear the Con, I'm going to run a game, and every character is actually named after a real patient, and all of their powers are inspired by that name. And when you sit down at the table...
We're talking like Lipschitz level type stuff. Worse.
Oh, dude, let me tell you right now. Government bureaucracy, there are people like us that work at the bottom levels of it, and here's how I know. Because you get these people that are so dry and so stodgy and they are so dead on the inside, they don't see what's going on. But there's somebody kind of like us down there, to borrow from Eminem, spitting on your onion rings, you know, that mm-hmm. type of guy somewhere at the bottom. Because when we did what's called meaningful use certification, because I work for a company that writes medical software and we have to certify that we meet certain government standards. We got the test data from the government Okay. Mm-hmm. This is their test data.
This is test data, not real people.
Not real people. So there's no HIPAA violation here. But this was the federal government supplied test data. I wish I had a list of them in front of me. If I'd known we were talking about this, I would have brought the list with me. The names were all stuff like Penny Puffer. There was one guy in there whose initials were KKK. Every person in there had a name that was messed up, like all of them. But it was like just messed up enough that if you were looking for it, you would see it.
Yeah.
But if you're some soulless bureaucrat, well, Penny Puffer, of course, you know, I have a cousin named Penny and blah, blah. I like puffin penguins. And
all right. Well, who doesn't?
We're not on the mic. So I'm going to tell you some names.
Okay.
They're going to blow your
but
I would have put Brodor on the spot here because you said you would take the names and you'd give them powers related to it. So these are real people that I have met. Okay. I want to know what power you give them. Orangelo and Lamangelo, they're twins.
Oh, well,
spelled orange jello and lemon jello.
Well, they're gelatin elementals, of course, right? I mean, they're precisely, and they have to be the two flavors, right? They have to be the orange and the lemon jello.
Harry Pickle.
Oh, I think this one. I'm going to defer to Pat.
My chart topper is still the dad of a guy Chad and I went to high school with. Well, actually, elementary school, junior high, and high school is. Honest goddamn is Harry Dick Whacker. That is not embellishment. That is not alteration. That is the man's name.
I knew a guy named Richard Dick. His name was Dick Dick. And we said that he should become a private detective so he could be Dick Dick Dick.
Dick Dick, Dick the Dick.
Yeah, no.
I'll see Dick 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 the Dick.
So, all right.
What?
So
he started out that way, too.
Working at my job, all right? Yeah. I have to do the exact same thing. I have to fill out enormous amounts of test data of my own so that we can see if the software is working and such. And I have the exact same problem because I'll sit there one moment I'm programming and it's challenging or whatever, maybe frustrating, but it's at least challenging. And then the next moment, my soul is just draining away.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
Yes,
right?
And so I start losing my mind. Now, this is not a HIPAA violation because this is all invented stuff.
Test data, not real.
They gave me a real doctor whose last name is Sanchez. So, of course, I changed his first name to Dirty.
Right.
And I start going through, and all of the patients, they were all having, like, cryogenic surgery on the penis. And, I mean, it was just this unbelievable. Like, right. I started looking through what's called the ICD codes, which are diagnostic codes, and finding the most absurd diagnoses I could. Like, one of them is injured riding a horse when being hit by a trolley, and like this, and the treatment was cryosurgery on the penis, and I just started. The whole thing was like that. It was just completely,
and it made it out into production
almost. So what then happens is we start.
Do I know developers or what?
We start partnering with this company that's going to handle a lot of our online data services. And so I have to have a test account with them to make sure that we're getting data back and forth right. And everything's going good until I hit a hitch. And I hit one of the developers up over there. And I'm like, hey, I don't understand why I'm sending this and getting this response. And several hours go by and suddenly get a response back. It says, we want you to know your data has been all around our office. And we are so glad to finally have a client who doesn't have a pole 10 feet up his ass. He's like, this is the funniest stuff we have ever. And nice. So, and he and I started talking about like, he like made some joke and it was somehow aliens related. And so I asked like, I just got done playing Alien Isolation. It was a great game. He's like, I'm playing it right now and I love it. And so we start talking back and forth. And like struck up their development team and I are now like buddies to where like if anyone else contacts them, it gets a support ticket and they'll get to it.
Yeah.
If I write them 5 minutes later, they've got the system fixed and they've got it back to me.
Yeah. That's awesome. See,
dude, it's the lesson of Ben-Hur. Have you heard my Ben-Hur story?
Mm-mm.
OK, my Ben-Hur story. And I think I've told it on the show, but in case I haven't, or in case your news show never heard it before, when I was a little kid, I was watching the Ben-Hur chariot scene.
You seen the remake?
I've seen they're making a remake, but I saw the Ben-Hur chariot race scene and I didn't get what was going on. And I had some specific question that I now don't remember because I was a little kid at the time. But the way my parents explained it to me is they said that all the horses out there will run fast because they are being whipped. They will run as fast as they have to stay ahead of the whip. But Ben-Hur's horses will run even faster because they love him. And they will run faster than any whip could make them run. And that is such a true life lesson. If you are ever interacting with anyone, whether you're their manager or anything, if you get somebody to like you, to love you, to care about you, they will do more than you could ever intimidate them into. And I have worked for and with so many people who do not get this, despite it being such a common sense life lesson.
Well, it's because they're weak managers and they're weak people, and they're scared, because the reason why they behave that way is they have so many other personal deficiencies. Most important of them is that they're not actually good at their job.
Right.
And they're terrified that they're going to be exposed.
I've worked under bosses that, quite frankly, were not that good. That, quite frankly, they didn't really know their job, and I was having to cover for them a lot. But they took such good care of me that they fostered in me such a love and loyalty that if something came up in a meeting and they'd start to falter, I would immediately step in and take over and be like, well, actually, what he did was this, and this is how we're going to work it out, and blah, 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 and all this stuff. And I would save their bacon because I liked them.
That's awesome. And my current job, I mean, it's the exact opposite of what I used to do. I hate every day at my job. I hate what I do. I hate the industry. I hate the company. My boss is fantastic. She's really great.
And that's probably why you're there. There's an article.
Well, that and the money.
Well, yeah. And you have to pay bills.
Benefits.
But yeah, I mean, there's an article that's been around for years and it's completely true, which is your employees are quitting you is the title of the article. But it's there's a lot of research that has shown the number one reason that people quit a company and the number one factor tied into their opinion of their job is their immediate supervisor.
I've been at my current job for almost a year and I hate myself for it, but you're absolutely right. If my supervisor wasn't my supervisor, if it was somebody else, I probably would have found another job already.
Yeah, now, I can tell you.
I have been in environments where that isn't the number one reason, and those are really horrible places to be in.
Yeah.
When there are other things that are more important than your immediate.
Worse than your supervisor.
Yeah, when the entire team loves their supervisor and they still want out of there.
Yeah.
Those are really bad environments to be in.
Which is the, I mean, that's where I work now, is that, I mean, we've got a pretty surprising turnover rate.
Huh.
But anyway.
All righty. Well, I think this, we're going to wrap this one up since we covered a lot of ground. Not on anything in particular, but hey.
There was some gaming.
Yeah, there was some gaming.
Ribwans?
Look, hey.
Ribwans. Why do I have the feeling that Ribwans are going to make an appearance in your game?
Are you kidding me? Yeah. Oh, no. The Supreme Necromancer of Volkar has Ribwans.
You know,
wanded for her pleasure.
Yeah. And you know where you can store them, right? I mean, they go right back in.
Yeah.
You can pull them out slowly.
Of an adamantine plate that has been affixed to protect
him. Don't do a plate.
Removed.
See, here's what I found, because I take great pleasure in grossing out my players.
Oh, amen. Again, not for the mics.
Sarah takes great pleasure in grossing out your wife because it's easy to do and it really bothers her.
Yeah. So what you do is you don't put the plate there. The appearance of normality. But then you build up that something is going to happen. And so they're like trying to imagine it in their mind, but they're never going to get it. And then you do something like puts this heel of his hand on the edge of his rib, on his lower rib, and pushes in with a sharp motion, and you hear this sickening crack.
He lifts up his shirt.
And then he pulls out the rib slowly as he grimaces.
He lifts
in pain.
Up his shirt, and there's a mouth across his stomach, and he can reach into the mouth and pull out a rib.
like a barbecue rib.
Yeah.
You know, like, give me that. I was eating.
Exactly. Cool. So, all right. Thank you guys for tuning in. We're sorry for everything. Have a great week and great games, and we will catch you next time.
I'm not saying it.
See ya.
There you go. See?